What's going on, guys? James Camacho here. This is Kicking It With Camacho. It is a rainy day in New York City. March 8th. Oh, my God. It didn't snow at all this year. Dude, I was just in Oregon, Medford, Oregon. By the way, anyone who is at the Medford shows that has is listening to this, thank you for coming out. Really appreciated it. Did I talk about Medford? No, okay. I haven't recorded a podcast since Medford. All right. Oh, my God. I was just thinking like, oh, I had like, what do you call it? Deja vu in my head, whatever you call it. What's that deja? Oh, was that Beyonce and Jay-Z? How does that song go again? Deja vu. No. I love how I said that in the fucking ABC, my Jackson 5. Deja vu. It's easy as deja vu. Oh man, that Deja Vu song with Beyonce is the shit. I can't play. I was gonna play some of it so I remember what it sounded like. But you know, with the copyright laws on YouTube and social media and you know, I don't want to get like flagged or whatever. So, anyways, guys, yeah, it was snowing in Medford, and everyone was like Medford, Oregon, and everyone was like, "Oh, how's the weather back in New York?" And I'm like, you know, it's cold and rainy, but like it didn't snow. I don't think it snowed once this year, man. It's so crazy. I guess it's global warming. I guess it's the fucking Jews. I don't know who's controlling the weather, you know, but it is it no longer snow. When I was growing up, dude, there would always be like 3-4 like big snowstorms. And then you would have like your, you know, 7 days of whatever, like 7 separate days of like blanket snow, you know, literally from like December. Oh, the cats are on one now. You guys might get some cat this episode because they are running around having a good time. Whoa, Jesus Christ! Hey, don't knock the camera! Don't knock the camera! Oh my God, they're getting dangerously close to knocking the tripod over. But yeah, like when I was growing up, man, like from like the November to like February, I mean, you would just have weeks. I mean, those whole winter months, you would just be covered in snow, you know? And that doesn't happen anymore. It's just like, now it's just rainy and cold. It's like, just fucking, well, I might as well just live in Seattle, man, with the prices I'm paying out here, you know? I like snow. I don't get people that don't like snow. There's so many people that are like, I got to get the hell out of the Northeast. The snow is ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't know, man. What a snowy day, is there not anything more beautiful, right, than when everything's, you know, covered in white, the trees, the lawns, the roads, right? The flurry. I don't know. There's something beautiful about that, right? You go outside in like your beanie, your big puffy jacket, right? You do some snow angels, make some snowballs. I don't know. There's something about snow that makes me feel like a kid again, you know? And, you know, as you get older, anything to make you feel young again and jovial and innocent is something that, you know, can't take for granted. Anyways, before we get too sad, there's always a point in every podcast where I get sad. Usually it's towards the end. I don't want to get too sad. What are we, fucking 6 minutes in? I just checked. Am recording. Dude, I did one of the shows I recorded at Medford. I had a fucking podcast fart moment where I forgot to hit the record button. So, oh man, I am a stupid human. Anyways, guys, thank you so much for your viewership. I really appreciate it. Please like, share, comment, subscribe, whatever other things that they, engagement things that you can do on there. Please do that. I hope you enjoyed the last episode with Kevin. I'm going to try having guests on here and there. It's not going to be a weekly thing. Just whenever I feel like there's someone I like that would, you know, have good chemistry with, we can come bullshit. But yeah, let me know if once we have a few guests in, let me know if you prefer solo cast or guest cast. You know what I mean? Ooh, there's something in my eye. Ooh, ooh, ah. You ever talk to someone and then like you start getting something in your eye and you start doing what I'm doing right now where you're kind of like, and then in your mind you're like, did they think I'm weird? Like that I have like Tourette's or something, or like, you know, I have a thing. Anyways, God, I'm so insecure. Anyways, but hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you think. And I guess we'll know because I'll know because, you know, I'll look at the viewership numbers. But yeah, speaking of viewership numbers, I got some goals, as you guys know, that I need your help accomplishing. And You guys are awesome. You guys are getting me there. And I wanted to give you the weekly update. We are currently at 2,527 watch hours of 4,000 needed. Every day, every week, you get about 100 new hours. So, hell yeah. Let's keep it going. I'm going to add a couple new ones. So, I talked about my triple C's, the three C's in my life, the only things that matter, my career, my cats, and my chest. And I wanted to kind of keep you guys updated about where I'm at with the chest press, the bench press. My goal is to be able to bench 225, right? And, proper form, good form, everything. 225 pounds. And today I benched and I put up a new personal record of 190 pounds. Now, just because I'm insecure, I do want to let people know that I used to be able to bench, like, I got to like 215, 250. I was able to bench 225 on the assisted press, but the free bench I wasn't able to. But I think I definitely talked about this in a past podcast, but I wanted I kept realizing like, even though my bench was getting up, I was feeling it was kind of like painful in my shoulder. And upon further study and review and then watching other people bench, I realized like my form wasn't great. I was kind of benching like this and I was putting too much stress on my shoulders and not actually extending my chest. So now I bench. Now I changed my form where I bench kind of like this. I bring it back and then I'm activating the chest more, gets the triceps going, and it feels way better. It's like I don't feel any shoulder pain anymore. And so I had to like literally start over again. Like I remember, boy, maybe it was almost maybe like 3 weeks ago, I went to go bench. Like I had to like relearn, and I was like benching 135, which is like standard, like really, really like low standard. And I think I put up like one or two. But I have strength. It's just like working on the form. Had to like take a couple steps back. You know, that's what you got to do in life. Sometimes you got to take a few steps back, observe in order to like see what the landscape is so you can jump over. But anyway, so I hit 190 today, which is actually pretty insane if you think about it. In a month, I've increased my bench press about 60 pounds. Like I said, I have the strength there. It's just I've been working on the form. So if someone who just started working out was like, I just increased my bench by 60 pounds in a month, you'd be like, what are you on, fucking steroids? But I have the experience of actually putting up that weight. It's just now it's a bit, form is better. Anyway, so yeah, I'll keep you updated every week. Every week I bench two times a week and I try to go up 5 pounds a week. So I'll keep you updated on that. Also, a new goal I have is I want to get my TikTok to 200,000. I am currently at 185,000. Actually, I think I just went to 184.9. Dude, I've been stuck on this number for, I think I was at 190 at one point. Like, I was getting really close to 200K. And, oof, like, I don't know. Everything fell apart. My content hasn't been hitting. Maybe I got shadow banned, but I think a lot of it's just my content isn't resonating. I had a couple things go viral that were kind of relevant to my ex-girlfriend and her being Indian and me being Chinese Puerto Rican. So I think obviously it's like, you know, if you get a fucking bunch of people following from one thing, you know, like if you get a bunch of people following you because, you know, you're dating someone and then you don't date them anymore, then your content is not about the thing they followed you for, you know. That's not how you keep people going, but that's okay. You know, it's it happens, and I'm trying to figure out what people are into so I can get my following to 200K. So, guys, if you don't already, please go follow me on TikTok. Let's get that goal. I mean, we're 15,000 away. That may sound like a lot to some people, but if I can get one viral video going on there, you can get 10,000 followers. I've got like 50,000 followers once from a viral video. So yeah, you just need one video to really hit off. So go ahead and go on there. And if you like something, share it. Don't just share anything. Please, if you think something's really funny and a friend would like it, please share it with them. Anyways, that's my whole spiel. Oh, my handle on TikTok is Kamach Bro. All right, guys. So Man, it's fun being alone. Oh, real quick before we move on to the podcast, I would like to announce that this weekend I'm back on the road. I'm going to be in the Northwest, Richland, Washington, March 8th, 9th. Richland, Washington. I got a college gig March 7th, which is so the podcast comes out Friday, right? So I'll have just finished a college gig in South Dakota yesterday, and now tonight I'm in fucking Richland, Washington. It's a mess. I am the worst router, but you know what? I'd rather do this than work a fucking office job. So what am I complaining for? So Spokane, Washington is March 10th. That's this Sunday. If you happen to be in the Northwest, Spokane, Washington, or Richland, Washington, come out and see me. Albany, New York, March 24th. Let's sell some tickets for that. New York City, March 30th, Soho Playhouse. Let's sell some tickets for that. And Houston, April 6th. I got pretty much like a brand new 45-minute set that I'm doing. You know, I got to be honest, the set's kind of dark. It's very emotional. It's, you know, the first half is kind of just, you know, your comedy, your regular comedy club humor. Jokes about my race, dating, you know, it's just observational stuff, topical stuff. And then the second half of this set is really, I get into like, you know, the breakup, therapy, growing my childhood. So, which was kind of like my first hour. Same thing, just a lot of like, you know, dating, girlfriend, Chinese, Puerto Rican, drinking, shit. And then the second half was like, you know, my relationship with my parents and therapy. So, yeah, come out and see it, man. It's sometimes I think it's a little bit on the too dark side for stand-up comedy. But, hey, this is it's an art form, and this is what I want to do. And, you know, it's still funny. So, yeah, come see me on the road. And, all right, enough of the bullshit. Let's get into it. This week we have some interesting topics, a couple stories, I guess a lot of questions this week, and then a motivational quote per usual to end on. But let's start off this. So I've been on the road, been flying a lot, and I'm very blessed. I fly pretty well. You know, I fly Delta. I've been flying with them for a few years now. I got status with them, so usually when I fly, it's first class. Comfort. I don't really sit in economy much, and you know, I got Delta Sky Club access, I got TSA pre-check, I got digital ID, I got all this shit where it makes going to the airport pretty effortless and nice, you know. But dude, I gotta say this is gonna be controversial, and you know, I'm just speaking from the heart. You know, this podcast is you know, me being authentic and real, and you know, I'm a good person, I don't mean any harm, but it's like, dude, if you're if you're a heavy set person, I mean, you gotta, like, there's gotta be something where there's gotta be something where you get two seats to yourself. Like, you can't just have one seat if you're a heavy set person. So, I've taken like 5-6 flights in the past couple of weeks? I think there was two where I was literally stuck next to someone that was you know, heavy set. And, dude, it's like, listen, I don't care. You live your lifestyle. That's fine. I don't give a fuck what you eat, how you want to live your life. Everyone's different, right? You know? I would judge you the same way you may judge me, right? As a person that eats healthy, very regimented, works out, like, you know? And I would hope that's like, hey, you do you, right? You do you. But, like, dude, on the plane, it's just like all the seats are the fucking same. There's no space to begin with. There was one, I don't even think I was in first class. Because in first class, this wouldn't be an issue. But, like, I think I was in comfort. And one of the times, I was just in economy. But it's like, dude, it's like, when you're heavy set, the seats don't fit heavy set people. So, like, this lady's in the middle. I'm on the side. Dude, she's literally, like she's completely into my space. So, let's say this is my seat right here, right? From where my shoulders are. Like, that's the seat, right? Bro, she's literally, like going into, like, my arm, you know? And it's ridiculous, because it's like, I pay for my space on the seat, and when you get the middle, you get the armrest, that's totally fine, but like, to have someone, like, to have a seat where someone's, like, taking up, like, literally, like, a fourth of your space is fucked up, and, like, It's a tough thing to say. It's a tough thing to talk about. But I really think, like, if you're on the heavier side, I mean, I don't know how they would do this. Is this discrimination? But, like, maybe you need to, like, input your size. Is that illegal? In any other case, can someone ask you your weight? I guess you can't, right? But I don't know, man. There's got to be something where, like, if you take up a certain amount of space, and this could be for someone who's tall, too. It's like, you got to get two seats, or you get, like, a discount on the other seat. There's got to be something, man. I mean, like, I know, and listen, part of this is how greedy the airlines are, right? They don't give a fuck about people. They don't give a fuck about, I mean, it can't be comfortable, too, for that one person to be sitting there fucking, like their body's oozing out of the little tiny space, right? And they probably feel self-conscious fucking, I'm sure she's not happy that, like, her fucking shoulder fat is digging into my fucking chin, you know? But it's like, there's got to be something, man. I mean, I don't know. But, like, the company, you know, how the airlines are, companies are. It's like, they're not going to give people two seats for the price of one or discount it because they're bigger, you know? Like, they want to suck every living dollar out of people. But, like, I don't know. You know what there should be? And, again, this won't work because of money. But maybe they have, like, a section in the plane where it's for, like, big and tall, you know? There we go. Big and tall section. That actually doesn't sound too offensive or problematic. The big and tall section where, like, if you're 8 feet tall or you're 696 pounds, right, or whatever it is, right, you got a, I don't know, you got a club foot or something, right? I don't know what it is. Maybe you're, like, stuck on you, right? You're conjoined twin or something. You need there's got to be a section where that's just for you, right? And then you pay whatever. But then again, it's just like, then the airlines are going to make less money because those spaces that could be three seats now is only seating two people. So I don't know. I guess, you know, it's funny how I just talked myself. Hey, look who it is. It's Bulba. Come here, buddy. Everyone keeps asking to see you. Oh, I see you come in, you leave. Just like every woman in my life. Hey, look. You want to say hi? Look at the camera. Oh, he got shy. Anyways, but yeah, I don't know, man. And listen, as I'm yapping about it, and I hope, you know, no one's upset with me. At the end of the day, I'm sitting there in the seat, uncomfortable. But in my mind, I'm like, hey, man, this is a, whatever, 2-hour flight, 3-hour flight. So, you know, we're flying. I'm getting to my gig in fucking 2 hours, which is amazing. Like, I fly well, so I'm appreciative. And you have these minor inconveniences. I mean, when you sit next to a big person, it's just like your flight's delayed or your flight's canceled or, like, whatever, you know? Or, you know, you miss your connection. It's just one of those things that happens. What are you going to do? But, I don't get too upset about it. You know, my mind is just like, man, I don't know. If I was that person, and I'm taking up fucking, I would just feel so bad, man. I would never want to fly, you know? That's me, because I'm a very empathetic person, right? I feel guilty all the time for shit. I just couldn't. God damn it. Because you got it. Like, and like, if you're a big person, heavy set, let's say, to be a little bit more nicer about it. I mean, can you just comment? Like it must, because there's no, like, if you're sitting, right? No. So, yeah, if you're sitting in a seat and the seat's open and you know someone's coming and then they come down and it's a big, every time it's a big person coming, everyone's sitting down is like, oh, please God, no, please. It's just how it is. No one, because people want their space. They don't want to be, you know, they don't want to smell shoulder. But it must be such a bummer if, like, as a big person, you're walking down and then you go, oh, that's my seat. And then I'm sure, like, I'm probably at that face of, like, oh, really? Okay. And, you know, oh, God damn it. I'm trying to, oh, there's got to be something, because it's not comfortable for everyone. It's not comfortable for the person that has to sit there. It's not comfortable for the person next to them, you know. But again, the airlines, if it means less money, they gonna tell us to fuck ourselves. Fuck you, fatty. All right. So I just wanted to say that, man. I feel like I feel bad even bringing it up, but Oh, man, it's just one of those things. Like, you know, I feel like the last few episodes, you kind of complain about, you know, companies and capitalism, and it's just like, yeah, that's just a sad world we live in. You know, if they really cared about people and their comfort and shit, they would do something, but they're not going to risk. They're not going to risk losing money. Anyways, all right, so let's move on. I found this interesting. Apparently, in New York, Governor Hochul is going to deploy 1,000 National Guardsmen, state cops, to carry out bag checks in New York City's subway. First line of this article is nearly 1,000 National Guardsmen in New York State Police and MTA cops are being deployed to carry out bag checks in the Big Apple's crime-ridden subway system, Governor Kathy Hochul announced Wednesday. She says these brazen, heinous attacks on our subway system will not be tolerated, Hochul said, as she announced a 5-point plan to crack down on the city's burgeoning underground crime wave. Dude, it's just so funny. She also says no one heading to their job or to visit family or go to the doctor should worry about that person sitting next to them possessing a deadly weapon. They shouldn't worry about whether someone's going to brandish a knife or gun. That's what we're going to do with these checkpoints. It wasn't immediately clear when commuters would start seeing these extra forces or at which subway stations. So, I gotta be honest, man. I've already noticed it. The major subway stations, like Penn Station, Times Square. What's another major one? Maybe like Grand Central. I've noticed it. Like, every time you pull into a station, the doors open. Like, there's cops everywhere, you know? And I thought, this happened a couple weeks ago. I was on the train. And, dude, literally every stop, there's, like, all these cops, right? And I'm, like, I'm starting to think, like, is there some kind of, like, terrorist threat in New York? You know, I'm Googling my phone. There's nothing. And then they actually, like, came in and pulled a couple people off the train randomly. And they were, like, it's not a big deal. We just need you to come with us. And I guess they kind of checked their shit. And I was, like, what the fuck is going on? I got all freaked out. But apparently it was nothing. But apparently this must be it. And I got to be honest, man. I like this. And it makes perfect sense, man. It's almost like when you go to school and, like, it's one of those schools that are, like you know, are known for fights and shootings and all that shit. And then you have to go through the metal detectors and shit, right? That's exactly what this is. It's like, dude, all this crime happening on the subway, it's scary, man. Like, you go on the – dude, I used to go on the subway before COVID. I used to go on the subway till, like, 4 a.m., come home. Be hammered. I never had to worry about it. Now it's like if you go there past like 11, you just like your head's on a swivel. It's just anxiety riddled. Someone comes on, right? Dude, it's gotten to the point now where like if you're on the subway and someone just as the train's moving and someone just decides to walk from like one side to the other, everyone kind of goes like, what the fuck is this, you know? And yeah, people shouldn't have to be worried about getting fucking killed or murdered, you know? So I like this. The only issue is that you could just hop on the train on a fucking, you know, not a big station with a knife or a gun or whatever and still kill someone. So, not totally safe, but I do like this because, man, you know, I live in Manhattan, so I'm going through a lot of these big major stations and knowing that, you know, they're cracking down on crime. I mean, literally, it's like that's your biggest fear when you're on the train. Someone pulling out a knife. Someone pulling out a weapon, you know, chasing you around that little car as your hope. You're just praying to God you make it until that next stop. And you could just fucking run outside, right? And then, you know, New York, fucking everyone in the subway, right? They see you getting stabbed. No one's going to help you, right? Oh, Jesus Christ. New York's crazy, you know? Can't wait to tell my family in Iowa what I saw. Let me pull out my phone. So I like this. This is actually pretty dope, man. Yeah, I wonder why they haven't thought of it sooner, you know? I guess I think during 9-11, after 9-11, they had the random bag checks and stuff, right? So So this is just, is this a random bag check? Let me see what it is. Is it random or they're going to, bag checks. Oh, so this is kind of like, all right, so I guess if you have a bag, they may just ask you to, they're just going to ask you if they could check it. They should just have metal detectors in the subway or whatever, right? At that point, like, when you're going through the fucking thing, you beep, you go in. They should just have, like, a thing that's quickly scans you. There's a cop on the side looking at it. And if you have, like, it's like going through TSA at the airport, you know? I mean, you know, that sounds like a good idea, but then, like, you know, then it's going to get to the point where it's like, you know, you can't carry water on the subway. You can't this, that, and then you're going to back up everyone. So, all right. I don't know. This to me sounds like a good idea, man. Like, I don't want to be fucking commuting in New York and, like, feeling like I can get fucking murdered at any second, you know. So, I'm all on board with this. It's rare. It's rare you hear a news article and you're, like, happy about it, right? That's the day and age we live in. Usually you hear news stuff. You're like, oh, what's going on in this world? Speaking on what's going on in this world, anyway, so I read this, I saw this thing on Twitter, and it's true. I mean, I don't know if it's true, but I saw this thing trending that this boxer, Ryan Garcia, who I don't watch boxing, I don't know who this guy is, but he claims that elites tied him down and forced him to watch Child Repe in Bohemian Grove. Apparently, on a podcast with, I think, Andrew Tate. Yeah. I thought Andrew Tate was in jail or something. Is that someone else I'm thinking about? Anyways. He goes, oh, man, it's all just curse-laden. I'm trying to curse less on the podcast because I don't want to. Once I am able to get monetized, I don't want him to, you know, I want him to monetize me. That's why I said rape instead of the ape word, you know? But anyway, so pro boxer Ryan Garcia made a stunning accusation claiming unnamed elites tied him down and forced them to watch rape children at the infamous Bohemian Grove. That's wild, man. I didn't know what the hell this was, so I Googled it. Bohemian Grove. Do you guys know what Bohemian Grove is? I didn't even know this was a thing, but it's just let me give you the actual definition, not my stupid unknowledgeable fourth grade vocabulary definition. Bohemian Grove is a restricted 2,700-acre campground at 20601 Bohemian Avenue belonging to a private gentleman's club known as the Bohemian Club. In mid-July each year, Bohemian Grove hosts a more than two-week encampment of some of the most prominent men in the world. So basically, it's this, like, you know, private country club, gentleman's club, where literally, like, presidents and not famous people, but like just the biggest, most successful people and whatever, prominent business leaders, government officials, U.S. presidents, former U.S. presidents, senior media executives, and people of power. So just the most powerful men in the world get together and have it out there. Which is, it's always fascinating when you hear about that, right? Where is that? What's another one? Like skulls and bones or whatever. You know, even in college when, like, you know, I went to Rutgers and, like, the big fraternity there was Zeta. So, like, you know, every time you walk past Zeta House, you're just looking at it like, oh, man, I wonder what they're doing in there. And, like, that's got to be crazy, right? Like, the secrecy and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, you want to be a part of it, but, you know, in college, I guess you could pledge. But then, you know, it's like if you pledge, you know, that's brutal, right? They'll haze you. They'll fuck with you. They'll make your, you know. I remember there was kids that were pledging fraternities when I was in college, and, like, you just never heard from them the whole semester. You know, it was wild. And then they come back kind of, like, douchier, which is kind of sad. But, yeah, obviously these Bohemian Grove, Bohemian Club, Skulls and Bones is something, like, you got to – I don't know. You got to get kind of born into, I feel like. Are you just kind of, like, make so much money and have so much power where you get accepted? And, like, you know, it's like trying to get into, like, that guy who owns Fanatics, Mike Rubin, trying to get into his, like, all his white parties and stuff. It's like you just got to be a major celebrity, you know? Like, because I was hearing on, what's the podcast with Shannon Sharp and Ocho Cinco. Nightcap. I was hearing a Nightcap, like, Chad Ocho Cinco went to some party and Mike Rubin was throwing during the Super Bowl. And, like, he got in the party, but then there was a VIP section in the party. And Chad Ocho Cinco is, I think, is he a Hall of Fame football player? But he was a great football player. He's definitely a celebrity. And just getting in the party, you had to be a celebrity, but then there was a VIP section. So there's a celebrity section. And he walked up, there was a rope, and like they wouldn't let him in. Like the person deciding whether or not he was celebrity enough said no, which is so fucking wild, man. The fact that like, I mean, that's like high school shit. You try to get into a party, oh, you're a loser. They swing the door on your face, right? You're not cool enough. Man. But it's like, you know, it's almost like, you know, like even though Chad Ochocinco is celebrity, I feel like when he, while he was playing in his prime, he would have no problem. But like, he's, you know, he's been retired for a while and, you know, not a, like, until like the explosion of their podcast, he hasn't been in the news lately. So it's like kind of weird. It's one of those weird things where it's like, you know who would get in, you know who wouldn't, right? Like a Kylie Jenner, Kim Kardashian would get in. Tom Brady would get in. Travis Scott. Paul Rudd, right? Those, just, you know. And then the people that wouldn't get in. I mean, who's like a person, who's like on the level of Ochocinco that wouldn't get in? Now, Eli Manning would get in. Who wouldn't get? Like a guy like Kirk Cousins might have trouble. Nah, Kirk Cousins will be. I feel like if you're an elite athlete currently playing, you're fine. But I feel like if you're like a backup quarterback or like a second tier receiver, you might have trouble. You know, Derrick Henry would be okay. I don't know. Anyways, but it's just, so what was my point here? Oh yeah, this Bohemian Grove. Yeah, man, it's so weird. You hear all this stuff about, you know, because there's, and then I looked it up and there's all these rumors, like Alex Jones was saying like they're doing satanic rituals, they're praying to like, and they're making sacrifices, kid sacrifices to like owl gods, and you're just like, I mean, it's so hard to believe. But then it's like, you know, there's that old saying, like, where there's smoke, there's fire. It's like, if it wasn't happening, why would there be so many fucking rumors, you know, about kids and, like, rape of kids? What is with the kids? What is it with, like, rituals, Satan, worship, and then kids? You know, why is it kids? Why can't it be, like, another person? Why can't it be, like, I don't know, like a mouse? Like, why does it got to be a kid? I guess because it's so much more hardcore. You know, I always have this theory, like, with these kind of things, like fraternities, anything, sororities, or these clubs. It's like, you know, these secret societies, like, they want to keep you in, right? So by the way they do that and kind of get you by the balls is to make everyone do some wild, illegal shit that they could go down for, right? And then it's like, hey, if you let this out that we did it, you know, you're also part of it too, you know? So that's kind of a way just to keep people, like, to keep the group tighter, you know? But, yeah, the kids, man, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know what it's like to be rich, famous, obviously, or powerful, but it's like, it's got to be a point where it's like, you're so powerful, money's not an issue, you get everything you want, you're so rich, right? You get all the girls, all the whatever you want, influence, power, people bending to your will. You just start to get bored with life and you start to do weird shit. And then I think also once you get this powerful and rich, you start looking at other people as like plebeians and like less. Then you start thinking like you're chosen, right? Like you're like special. And like you just, so you're so appreciative that like you start getting like oddly religious, right? You start praying to owl gods. You're making these sacrifices. Please keep me rich and powerful. You know, it's just a fucking interesting way to live, you know? When you're poor, you there's no God you want to pray for. It kind of makes sense in a way. Not with the kids, but it's just like, you know, if I were to get super successful, there would be a part of me that's like, man, I am so fucking fortunate. Even if I worked hard as shit, like there's got to be a part of you. Any rich, successful person, as humble as they are, they have to have a thing where they sit by themselves at home and like, man, this is sweet. You know? You know? If there's a God, God really likes me. You know? So, yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Interesting. Anything with closed doors, you're always kind of like, what's going on over there, you know? Anyways, all right, guys, let's get to some questions here. A little backed up on questions, a lot of good ones. Let's start with Drea. Drea has some great question. She asked me, what other forms of writing do you enjoy? Have you dabbled with screenwriting? I mean, you just said it. So the other forms of writing, I don't do as much. Right now, all my writing usually is for my stand-up comedy act. But I have dabbled. When I was growing up, I used to write a lot of short stories. I used to, I think, what was it, when I was a junior in college, I wrote my first screenplay, and I wrote about four more in that 1 year. I got really big into screenwriting. I wanted to be a screenwriter. I got the final draft. I was looking into, like, submitting it to contests and stuff. And I wrote four screenplays, all, like, really kind of teenage, raunchy, romantic comedies. I had one horror comedy I wrote. The first screenplay I ever wrote was it was about a guy, like a normal schlub like me, who ends up dating like the fucking most famous chick in the world. So it was like, it's like if I were just started, happened to start dating Kylie Jenner or like Kim Kardashian, you know? Probably more, I remember the screenplay I wrote, the girl was a little bit more my age. So like, if it's like if I was dating Kylie Jenner and everyone was like, who the fuck is this guy, right? So it was just the whole thing was just like a dude being thrown into like stardom because an average guy just started dating this ridiculous superstar. Oh, it was so ridiculous. I think the way they met too wasn't even like, I think it was at a bar, which is so ridiculous. Like you're never gonna go to a dive bar or whatever fucking sports bar and see a Kylie Jenner, you know, or Kendall Jenner, whatever the fuck, either one works. And then the second screenplay I wrote, oh man, I wrote four, I believe. God, I can't remember this. Oh, the second one. Shit, I can't remember. What was the second one I wrote? Damn, I don't remember. Maybe I only wrote two or three. There was one I wrote. It was basically my experience working at Macy's, but it was a horror. It was called Racy's because I used to work at Macy's, and it was so funny. Like, our staff, like the people that the employees was like, literally we had a Indian guy, me, Chinese, Puerto Rican, black guy, white chick. It was just kind of very diverse. So it was interesting. And we had a lot of fun there. We screwed around a lot, had a good time, made fun of our boss a lot. Didn't get really much work done. But I wrote a screenplay where, like, the mall, there was, like, a huge snowstorm. The mall, we kind of get locked in. And then overnight, the mannequins come to life and start killing everyone. So it's basically just like a survival thing, but it's also comedy. Like we're all like teenagers working in this fucking place. So we're all like doing drugs and like, you know, having sex with each other, and it's just fucking ridiculous. Man, I still have these somewhere, right? I shouldn't be looking this stuff up while I'm recording the podcast. Let me see if I have the screenplays. Racy's. I probably emailed it to myself a bunch of times, but yeah, Racy's working draft. I call the first draft working draft. I was so professional. So we have I have here Racy's You're Perfect, which was the one about meeting the girl, the celebrity. Maybe that was it. And then I remember I thought I did more than that. Shit. Maybe it was only those two? Of course, when there was something else in there too. But then there was also a real college story. That's right. Oh man, it's been so long. I don't even remember anything. There was another one. I think this was the second one. A real college story. Oh, there it goes. Look at that. A real college story. Working draft by James Camacho, Woodward Hall, class of 2001. A gem by Camacho Bro. That's me. February 18th, 2014 to March 2nd, 2014. That's how long it took me. It took me about 2 weeks to write this. Wow. I won't show it to you guys because it's, if I showed you what I wrote in here, I'd probably get canceled. Like I said, it was all teenage, sex, inappropriate, you know, American Pie type of stuff. Man, I kind of want to read these again. But yeah, so now I remember this one, this screenplay, A Real College Story. Why? Where's the? Sorry for the audio listeners. I'm trying to pull up the God, does anyone else have a MacBook Pro? Don't you feel like the search option in MacBook Pro never brings up like the actual things? That's not it either. So weird. I can't find... give me a second, guys. Sorry about that. Here we go. All right. So that's not it? There we go. Oh, what's that stupid little box? Oh, no. Okay. Anyway, so, yeah, a real college story was about, it was about my, it was pretty much about my freshman year of college. Wow. Man, this is bringing back memories. But it was literally my freshman year. Like, when I, on the thing it said Woodward Hall, that was the dorm I lived in my freshman year of college. It's about a guy goes to college, gets dumped by his girlfriend right before he goes to college, and his roommate is a guy who's like a transfer student from like the middle, I think India or the Middle East or something. And he's literally just his parent. He's just the most controlling parent. So he's like had no exposure to like girls, drinking, anything. So this guy who's like this kind of, you know, it's basically me, like this bro-y guy who gets dumped, gets partnered, gets into this dorm. He goes to college. He gets, you know, roommates with this guy who's had literally his whole life has just been studying, which is also me kind of. And it's just that dynamic of them like going through college together. So the guy who gets dumped, he kind of like, you know, he's trying to get over it. And then, but then he's kind of like a relationship guy. So he's like struggling with like getting over it, meeting girls, but he's like can't really get back into it because he's kind of relationshipy. And then the other guy, he starts experiencing like drinking and sex, and he just goes wild. So he just becomes like this fucking womanizer party animal. And it's fucking so stupid, man. This is the stuff when I was growing up that was cool, like American Pie and what else? Not another teen movie, Blue Mountain State. This is all, man, that stuff is gone now. You don't really see like a college, high school type of movie anymore. Cause I mean, with this cancel culture, man, they I don't even think they could like really show what college kids are actually, high school kids are actually doing when they're fucking around, you know, like Project X. Remember those fucking movies? Summer break, spring break, spring breakers. Do people still get down like that? Maybe with the internet, like people don't party or play beer pong anymore and like flip cup and get hammered. I'm sure they do. What am I talking about? But yeah, it's like that used to be a big thing, like just showing like that kind of lifestyle. And yeah, they haven't made a movie like that in a while. But that was basically all the screenplays I had, just kind of like this like college. Just think of a college kid who's horny and drinks a lot, writing screenplays. That's basically what it was. But hey, I'll take a look at them again. Maybe I'll write some new drafts and maybe I can send them off to someone. You never know, man. You never know. But I appreciate that question, Drea. Wow, that brought back a lot of memories. All right. Drea also asked, what's something I'm hopeful about? Drea, what I'm hopeful about is that I don't want to make it about me. But I am hopeful that I think I'm a talented, funny, honest. I feel like I have something to offer and give to people. And I hope one day people can see that, you know? And I'm hopeful that if I keep working hard, I believe in my talents, that I will. But, you know, it's tough. As hopeful as I am, I also understand that it's going to be a long process. And I just got to keep going for it, you know? But that's what I'm hopeful about. I mean, that keeps me going every day. You don't know how hard it is to just keep going, man. Sometimes you feel down, you want to give up, right? You're doing comedy, you're trying to, you know, you're doing podcasts, you're doing this, and like, sometimes it just feels like you're doing it for nothing, right? You're auditioning, not getting anything. But if I didn't have the belief and hope in myself, I wouldn't keep going. So that's what I'm hopeful about. I'm hopeful, and I'm hopeful that I'm going to be okay in terms of, you know, my breakup, which, you know, it's getting a little bit easier every day, but I feel like I'm hopeful that it was for the best, and I'm gonna be better from it. And I will have my utopia soon. You know, it's been a rough, really, it's been a tough year or two at this point, and I'm hopeful that things will get better. All right, let's move on. So we have more. Reshma, she asked me, do I ever think about getting old? What would you like your life to be like when you're, let's say, 60 or 70? I don't think about getting old that much. The only times I think about getting old is when I think about when I watch like sports, and then I see like the athletes who are like so good now are actually younger than me. Then I think about like, fuck, man. I don't think about getting old. I think like, oh, I'm old. I'm aging. You know, it's happening. And the only other times I think about getting old is you know, when I you know, think about dating. Or when I'm on the apps or whatever, and I start thinking about like, all right, like the type of people that I'm going to start dating, you know, like when you're in your 20s, everyone's kind of like really open and young and optimistic and like, you know, has options and like stuff, and then like less baggage, right? More about fun. And then when you get older, you could just tell people are kind of like they've had their experiences. They kind of know themselves better, a little more baggage. I mean, I'm not totally at that point yet. Like, I just turned 30, so it's like, it's still like young and hot and stuff. But like, because sometimes like I get on there and then you get like a 35, 34 year old, and then you see kind of like, I don't know, like they'll say like, whatever. It could be like anything from like, I have a kid, or it's just like, you know, I'm just getting out of something. Like, I'm still on here. Like, you'll literally see people write that in their bio. You're like, fucking Christ, I don't want to get to a point where I'm dating and everyone's kind of like jaded, you know? So those are the times I feel old. And like when I'm 60, 70, I mean, honestly, I would love to just be doing stand-up still, pumping out new material, new hours. Hopefully I can establish myself as an actor where I'm doing roles and stuff. And just trying to bring entertainment and joy and laughs to people. And motivation to people that that might need it. That's what, you know, this is a for life thing, 60, 70. And I also hope I have, like, family and then 60, 70, maybe grandkids and, like, you know, pets. Sadly, 60, 70, my cats won't be here anymore. But ooh, that made me sad. See, it always gets sad at some point. Every podcast gets really sad. But, yeah, 60, 70, still doing comedy and then having a family. All right. And then Norman's got a bunch here. No, not that many, but we'll see if we can get through most of them. Also, I got to do a Patreon after this, so maybe we'll do one because I got to save some fucking juice for the Patreon. Let's see here. So Norman asks, how long am I allotted when I'm doing stand-up? Like the time? So if I'm doing stand-up in New York City, it's always a showcase style where there's like five comics doing anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes. So when I'm in New York, 10 to 15 minutes, unless I'm doing a show where I'm headlining. So if you see me post something like I am headlining this show, it means I am going on last and I'm doing 45 minutes to an hour. If I'm, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to be in the city at the Comic Strip or the Comedy Shop or Greenwich Village Comedy Club, Broadway, whatever, these comedy clubs in New York, it means I'm just doing a spot on the show that's 10, 15 minutes long with four or five other comedians doing the same amount of time. So I hope that clears that up. Some people, it's funny because like to me, obviously I'm a comedian. I'm in the comedy world. But it's funny what people like, sometimes people go like, I'll tell them like, yeah, they're like, how long are you doing? And I'll be like, oh, I'm doing like 45. Like, what? That's a lot. What the fuck? I thought you were doing 2 minutes up there. I'm like, no, man, I'm a fucking comedian. What are you talking about? But you know, people don't know, you know? I don't know what Norman thought. Norman, I don't know if he thought I was doing a... It's all to do with social media, too. Every clip's fucking 30 seconds long, so I guess people do think, like, oh, you're just going up there for 2 minutes, right? Real comedy is you're going up there doing an hour. That's really what it's supposed to be, you know? Unless, like I said, it's a showcase where you're just showcasing your talent, just kind of giving little samples. But, yeah, it's interesting it's interesting what people think, you know? What comedians do. Yeah. Anyways, all right. And then he has another stand-up related question. How long does it take me to write material and how difficult is it to do? It ranges. So sometimes I'll write a joke day of, go try it. It works. I'm like, hey, there we go. And then it's not done, but I know I got something there. And then I'll continue to work on that. Sometimes I have ideas, do it on stage, crickets. I'm like, all right, let me try it again. Do it again, rewrite it, do it again. Meh. And then, you know, that could go on for like a month, 2 months. Could I mean, I've had jokes take me like a year to figure out. So it really just depends. Some takes, it could take a few days. Some could take years. Sometimes you forget stuff, it comes back later. And in terms of difficulty, easiness, I mean, usually the harder, more niche, more personal the topic is, the harder it is. Especially if it's like an unpopular opinion or something that's really specific to you, because you really have to bring people into your world. But if it's something like topical, observational, sometimes that's like a very, sometimes it's not that, I mean, it's not that hard. Especially jokes about race. Like I have, you know, you're basically borrowing stereotypes for laughs, which is like, it's not that creative, but like, so, you know, I try to do it in a creative way since I'm mixed race and stuff. But, yeah, or dating jokes, you kind of figure like, all right, like unless you have a really unpopular opinion, if you just have something like dating's tough, like everyone can kind of get on board with that, you know. Sometimes you tell stories on stage, and if it's a funny story, like something happened in your life, it's just naturally gonna be easier to tell. Like there's things that literally have just happened to me, and I just tell them on stage, and it works, you know. So it all varies. It all varies, Norm. All right. Let's finish this week's podcast with a motivational quote. I feel like I've kind of talked about this before, but it just hits really home to me. This is something I kind of figured out myself, but failing and giving up is failure. Failing and learning and keeping on going is a lesson. That's kind of a quote I came up with. There's so many variations of this, but it's like, yeah, like, you know, people will throw, you know, the word failure gets thrown around a lot. You're a failure, fail, 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 fail. It's like, it gives this impression that it's finality, right? If you fail, it's over. You're fucked. You're done. Kill yourself, right? Don't do that. But honestly, failure, that's not the case. Failure should be something that's looked upon as like a lesson or like a part of life or just something that happens. Some people are so scared of failure, or when it does happen, it really just kind of cripples them, right? They want to give up. It's too hard. But it shouldn't be looked at that way, man. Like, you know, if someone rejects you or, I don't know, you apply for something, you don't get it, man. Just like, you know, anytime someone applies for something and they don't get it, like people get upset. It's like, yeah, man, but at least you went through the whole process of like learning how to apply. So you learn that, and then the next time you apply for something, you'll have experience. You'll know what to do better. You'll just do it better next time. It's like, it's all a lesson, man. So I hate that. I hate how the feeling of the word fail and failure is. It feels so like it's over. It's not over, man. If you fail, it is far from over, dude. It just means that you got your wisdom and your experience, and take that shit and fucking roll with it, man. That's... Yeah, fail. Yeah. But I would say, I think fail is harsh. Fail to me should just be a lesson. Failure, like I said, is when it feels like you're labeling something or someone as something that didn't work out and it's over. And like, that's only when you give up, man. I mean, just think about comedy, man. It's like, you know how many times I try a joke and it doesn't work, right? If I was just like, oh, it doesn't work, it's uncomfortable, and no one laughs, I look stupid, fuck me, and I don't try working on it, making it work, that's a failure, because it never went anywhere. But if I try a joke, and it fails, and then I go, oh, maybe I'll try it this way. Oh, people kind of laugh when they, okay, let's build off that, and I get it to work, then that fail was just a fucking lesson. It was just practice, right? You know, when you practice sports, you run a play, you're going to fuck it up a few times. If you practice anything, you're studying for a test, right? You do a practice test, right? You fuck up, you learn. So, but all that shit's so much easier when you're in the comfort of your home studying or playing music. That's why comedy is so hard, because you got to put yourself out there. Sometimes when you apply for something, you're just, other people are rejecting you in a way. And that, for some reason, I mean, it's understandable. We're social creatures, but that shit hurts so much more, you know? So, yeah, guys, remember, failure is only if you fail and you give up. If you fail and you keep going, you learn from... But it's very big. You got to learn from your fucking fails, all right? You don't just fail, do the same shit over again. right? You don't just copy paste. You fail, you learn from it, do better the next time. It's just a lesson. So failing is not bad. Failing is not bad. All right, guys, that's this week's podcast. Well, we do the podcast bi-weekly. That's this Friday version of the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Like, again, please like, share, subscribe. Let's get the watch hours up. Let's get monetized. Let's get my TikTok following up. Let's get my bench up. You guys can help with that. I'll work on that one. And I'm going to record a Patreon now. So if you're a Patreon member, enjoy this Patreon exclusive. If you don't already fucking subscribe or have joined the Patreon, join it. $5 a month. You get a free episode, right? You get extra episodes every week. It's $5 a month. It's literally $1 a week, okay? If you want to support. The money only goes back to making the podcast better. All right, guys. Zaytsev and adios.